Oh my goodness gracious. Technical difficulties, ladies and gentlemen. This is Adi from Gate 7 International. I am so sorry for the interruption. We are experiencing all sorts of crazy things going on today. Nothing is working how it should, but here we are again anyway. Gate 7 International coming to you live on a Sunday here. And we do have a very special guest with us today. We have joining us today Alp. He is the Olympiacos Turkey account, and he is going to be chatting with us about Fenerbahce. We're going to be bringing him in shortly. But before we go ahead and get everything started today, just some general housekeeping. Guys, don't in to like and subscribe. The community is continuing to grow every day. We hit the 7,000 milestone on Instagram. So if you saw that before, I don't know if they talked about it on the last live show, but we hit it last week, right before the first leg. And we are less than 90 away from 4K on YouTube. So really excited, some huge milestones for us. And we are really, really pumped about all of that. So help us continue to grow the community and give us a like. Subscribe if you want to hear more from us and follow us on social media. You can follow us on X, Facebook, and Instagram. You can also support us on Patreon. Thank you to all of our Patreon members. We also would like to welcome our newest patron, George Yorgos Moustakas. Thank you so much for joining the community. You can do so yourself. For $1 a month, you can join the WhatsApp group. And then there's other tiers where you can get expanded content, so on and so forth. So we're really excited to continue to grow the community and to continue to build the show that everyone is here for, that we all love. So without further ado, I would like to get started. We're talking about Olympiacos potentially making even more history than it already has. And I'd like to introduce everybody here to Alp. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Ari. Everything is fine. And you?
I cannot complain. I am happy. I'm excited. I'm here to talk everything with you today. But before we talk about Olympiacos, I would like to find out a little bit more about how you came to start following Olympiacos.
Yeah, I'm from Turkey, and I like sports, and I'm more a basketball person than a football. And so in the years like 2010, early 2010s, I was following Greek basketball as well. So I was watching Olympiacos, Panathinaikos, also, of course, with the Turkish teams. And then, of course, the magical years with Vasilis Panouris, 2012-13, I got more sympathy to Olympiacos. And that summer, 2012, I was in Athens, and I visited SEF, the Piraeus, the basketball stadium. And there, I wanted to just go to see the place, and there was an office, and I told them I'm from Turkey and I like Olympiacos, and there they were really friendly to me. They gave me a t-shirt as a gift, and then they let me play in the SEF, like with the basketball. I was shooting there. So since that moment, I am Olympiacos fan.
That is an incredible story. I love that. That is amazing. Wow. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have a little bit different take here today, because we're going to get Alp's take as somebody that lives in both worlds. He's an Olympiacos supporter, and he's a huge fan of Turkish football, at basketball as well. He's going to give us some insights as to what we could see, and maybe the perspective from the ground as well. Quick comment here from Yorgos Moutzanos. Adi managed to start the stream worse than Fenerbahce started the match on Thursday. You are not kidding, my friend. I have no idea what's going on with my computer today, but it does not agree with me. Maybe that doesn't bode well for the match coming up. But we're going to start things by kind of taking a look back at the first leg. And there's really a lot we still can unpack. On the live show following the match, we looked at quite a few things about the match on Thursday. More specifically, the fact that our success came off of us pressing. It was our press. It was everything that we did off the ball to create mistakes that led to lead to every single goal that we had. Even the second goal, even most of the great opportunities that we had, all came at the result of a forced error, most of them in Fenerbahce's half of the field. And in open play, we really did not look that good. Building up for us, especially in the very beginning, before we got our first goal kind of against the run of play, we couldn't make much happening. Now, what I've just shared with you all here, this is something we shared on social media. This is a diagram of Olympiacos' attack flow. And what the attack flow chart shows us is the most passes and in what direction, the most distribution and the organization of those passes. This is how we had determined what our attack patterns were. And what you can see here, the positions, which are the average position when we had the ball, the position on the field is completely split from left to right. You basically have Masuras, Rodine, and Heze on the left. And then on the right, it's Fortunis and everybody else, with El Kabi kind of wandering around at the top of the field. Wasn't heavily involved in buildup, but was very heavily involved in the press. And what you can see here is basically what we saw in buildup. Anytime we had the ball on the left, on our left side of the field, it was Kostas Fortunis, and he was distributing ball. And then on the right side, it was usually some combination of Heze, Masuras, and Rodine. So in that respect, Olympiacos was not very good building up out of the back. We were doing much better when it came to the press. So with this in consideration and looking at this chart out, what was the perspective on the Turkish side? What was your perspective on this? Did you see the same thing that we saw in the data here?
Exactly. Also, actually, I want to start a bit from beginning. Before the game, like half hour before, all of the WhatsApp groups with my Turkish friends, they were complaining they cannot see Fred and Ismail in the starting lineup. So people actually got desperate even before the game, like when they couldn't see them as a starter. And the post-game reactions were in the media were also in this direction. And the coach was really criticized for the starting lineup decisions. So they were mentioning Olympiacos had intense pressure, and this was leading Fenerbahce to lose ball close to the box, and that hurt Fenerbahce a lot.
And honestly, we kind of also talked about it while we're talking about the beginning of the before the match even started. We talked about the beIN Sports Turkey anchor who was pretty much wrote Olympiacos off with his comments. He had made there was a quote about Mendy Libar being a B team coach, and he even called Stevan Jovetic, the Google translation was, a seasonal cotton worker. In our favor, this worked because we were underestimated. On paper, Fenerbahce's team is, we have to say, on paper, it is a better team. So in that respect, we were overlooked. So I think maybe that kind of helped when our press came out the gate like that. It probably caught them a little bit off guard. I think that in the second leg, though, when we go to I always forget the name of the stadium for Fenerbahce.
Çıkmış Saraçoğlu.
I thought it began with a K.
Kadıköy.
There you go. So I imagine that when we're playing away in Turkey, I don't know if this is something that we can approach the same way. Maybe we will, but I have to imagine that Fenerbahce will be better prepared in the second leg for what we saw. Now, Another besides the aspect of the pressing and the buildup, there were some important players that were also missing. We saw that Fred didn't start, and he was a player that Rezan Yetish had told us when Costa had done a pre-match interview with her, Turkish sports commentator, Turkish sports analyst as well. She had mentioned that, you know, people would look at Edin Dzeko, Dusan Tadic, but Fred is really the engine of possession, and he's the one that's making things happen. And she was absolutely right. Once Fred came on, the game changed. There were other aspects that we'll talk about as well, but once Fred hit the pitch, for me, he was a completely different sauce, and he impacted the game entirely. What was this the expectation that Fred being on the field would completely dictate possession? How was this aspect of it seen, Alp?
Yeah, actually, like I agree. And when the Fred comes in, especially when the Kurinic and Zaitz, they were out and Fred came in, the Fenerbahce had more chance to keep the ball and like play how they want. And also the left side, when they had Ferdi, they also could go from the left corridor. They also used it better. And they also connect this with Olympiakos, who was tired after 60 minutes. And that's why Fred also was like, he had more freedom to do what he wants to do.
Absolutely. And just another little quick diagram here. I have, we have a look at all of, this is something else we posted on social media. Everything I'm showing you here, you guys can check out if you want to take a look at it, a little bit longer look later. We're looking at all of the opportunities that Fenerbahce had. And Fenerbahce did not really have much inside the penalty area until deeper into the second half. And we did a very good job, actually, of keeping them from getting a lot of great opportunities inside. And the funny thing is that the total XG figure is a little bit, what's the word I'm looking, misleading, because the, you know, 0.76 of this is from the penalty. So if we're looking at their production in terms of shot quality on average, it's very close to what ours was without the penalty. So, but once you saw Fred, once Fred came in, I mean, there's a reason why all of Fenerbahce's big scoring chances, their highest XG opportunities came when he got involved. And it's for those very reasons. He still is very competent with the ball at his feet. He's scary when he's dribbling it into your defensive zone. He just knows where people are. He's very technical. And he can make moves around. Now, another player that was missing as well was Batshuayi. And Alp, I wanted to ask you, is he going to be the one starting in the second leg? Because if he's starting, then surely we're going to see a little bit more pressure on us than what Dzeko had.
Well, after the first game, there was a question to the coach about him. And he was replying like, the medical report was saying, I cannot even use him for 10 minutes. So that's why he didn't use him at all. But today in the Turkish Super League game against Karagümrük, he entered the pitch in the 46th minute and he was still running until the last seconds. So actually there are also many discussions about the medical team of Fenerbahce, like why players are injured often, why they are not fit, and why the coach is not using them if they are fit. So there are many question marks about that, but Shuai played 45 minutes today and he looked like he can be playing on Thursday.
And that's going to be very important for us, because we all know that even at 38 years old, Edin Dzeko is very dangerous, maybe not in the air, but he's very dangerous if you're allowing him to get opportunities in front of goal. I believe, if I remember correctly, the stats I had posted, he's got over 30 goal contributions this year for Fenerbahce in all competitions, which is nothing to shake a stick at. So I believe it was 23 goals and 9 assists. But Dzeko is very easily taken out of the game if you frustrate him, like we saw for Fenerbahce at home in the Karaskaki. I mean, once you take him out of the game mentally, he offered nothing. I mean, he was more concerned with what he getting the fans upset than anything else. But the Batshuayi issue is going to be, for me, it's going to be very interesting. And you brought up the injury concerns. We saw so many players from Fenerbahce go down. And I even had questions about what their physios were up to. Because, I mean, there were a lot of, it looked like pulled muscles or people, I should say, cramping up. Is that something that's been a common criticism of Fenerbahce this year? Or was this just a one-time thing?
Yeah, it's coming criticism. Like today, the post-game talks, discussion, they were all about the medical team of Fenerbahce.
Very interesting. Very interesting. And then, of course, playing today, it doesn't make things any easier because a guy like Fred, he played 90 minutes today.
90 minutes, yes.
So, he's somebody that they would have to rely on to get by us. Because he was, for me, the real positive momentum. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they handle that, playing full 90 against us. And I'm sure he's going to be starting in the away leg. So I'm very curious how they're going to handle that. But one other quick thing I wanted to touch on before we move on and kind of talk about how we think things will be positioned in the second leg, because we do have a couple questions from some people in the audience about that. I wanted to also kind of focus on real quick what Olympiacos did in the final third. Something that's very important, a pattern that I talked about on my own, my personal accounts, that people aren't talking enough about, is how we are finally, as a team, able to get so many more opportunities inside the penalty area. Sure, it was off of, a lot of them were off of our press and our counter press, but under Mendilibar, this is the first time for multiple games in a row, almost every game since he's taken over, that the majority of our opportunities come inside the penalty area. Even under Diego Martinez, we would see the majority of our chances coming from outside of the penalty area or at the tip of the penalty area, versus now, even when we're getting fewer opportunities or maybe less quality opportunities, we are still getting opportunities that are inside the penalty area. And it is extremely important. Alp, was there any mention in Turkish media about any of this, about how Olympiacos was able to penetrate the penalty area, especially in the early parts of the game?
Yeah, they were talking like in the connection with the Fenerbahce defenders. And first of all, they mentioned that Mendilibar studied his strategy very well. And it was the part they were criticizing Ismail Kartal so much, that you can see that your main strategy is not working. But he was still like, he still kept the, tried to set up the game from the defenders, and they were losing ball run around and they were conceding goal. So they were talking about this, like very positive about Olympiacos, and they were not expecting this from Olympiacos as well. And they were also hoping the Ismail Kartal should make some change beginning of the second half, because in the first half nothing worked for Fenerbahce, and they were surprised that Ismail Kartal didn't change anything. And then there was a third goal, and then there was red sauce.
The thing for me was, and early on we saw our press was very effective on Fenerbahce's left side. Our right side of the attack, Fenerbahce's left side. Oosterwold, I think is how you pronounce his name. He was your left back in the first half. And the left-sided center back, I believe it's pronounced Soyuncu, is that correct?
Soyuncu, yes.
Soyuncu. So both of them kind of look shell-shocked on the press, because you would have El Kabi forward, Masuras forward, and they were having to get rid of the ball very fast and making some mistakes, giving the ball up. Even when Karioglu came on in the second half, early on, he had a couple of mistakes. And he is such an important figure going forward for Fenerbahce, because in the lead up of the game, I had looked at all of the open play attacks for Fenerbahce, and I found that almost a little over half of the total attacks that Fenerbahce had come from the left side. They come from the left side, and most of them are coming through the efforts of Karioglu. So he's such an important character in the offense of Fenerbahce. And when you're able to press and put that pressure to keep him further back and prevent him from getting forward with the offensive unit, it hamstrings the ability of an attack that is so contingent on that left side, especially when it's coming with his link up with some of the left-sided players, whether it's guys like Tadic or Fred, if he's coming out that way. It was an extremely important disruption to have. Now, of course, that stopped once the penalty happened and our press dropped. But we'll talk about that as we begin to review the other game. Do you believe that there's going to be a concerted effort to make sure that that left side continues to be the strong side in the next match, or is there more that can be offered elsewhere on the pitch?
Well, I agree the left side will be strong. They will for sure start with Ferdi Kadıoğlu from the beginning. And like I assume they they will try to be more careful, the setting up the game from the defenders. So, I mean, I don't know if they will go to the same trap in the second time, in the second leg, which I hope, but we will see.
Absolutely. So let's, before we start talking about what we could see in the second leg and really where we think things will go, I wanted us to, you and I both, to just kind of really quickly talk about what we see and what is seen in Turkey as both the strengths and weaknesses of each side. So let's start with Olympiakos. Olympiakos' strengths, for me, it's 100%. It was the press. It was the press, and then the clinical ability of guys like Jovetic and Kostas Fortunis. And on the press, if we're going to talk about individuals, guys like Ayub Elkabi, who were just running, him and Masuras running all over the place for the first part of the press, and then the guys that were following up behind him, like Chiquinho and Heze, who were picking the ball up and making the interceptions. What for you, was there anything different on the Turkish side of things that you believe was a strength that I didn't mention?
Well, I think you basically mentioned everything was there.
Okay. So therein lies then the strength of Olympiakos. Now, Olympiakos' weaknesses. For me, the weakness was our buildup how I saw it building up out of the back. I didn't think it was that good. I brought up the diagram, kind of how split things were. I thought when our press especially wasn't really kicking into gear, it wasn't very good. I also thought that defensively we were okay, but Ortega, for me, there were a lot of problems on that left side. And that wasn't even the strong side of Fenerbahce, but we saw multiple mistakes with Ortega missing his march or not getting back, and opportunities that maybe did not end up as serious opportunities, but so many times Fenerbahce was able to get forward off of a mistake like his. What did you see, and what are they talking about in Turkish media as the weaknesses that they saw for Olympiakos?
Well, they mostly talk about how the energy of the team was going so much down after 60 minutes, and they were criticizing Mendilibar. The first move of him came in the 82nd minute.
Oh, of course.
They were talking about lack of creativity in the team, and they were also mentioning we were missing Podence in the right. Creativity in the offense.
Absolutely. And I think that we can talk about Mendilibar's lack of substitutions, but for, I know most of us, I listened to the show that the guys did after the game on Thursday, and that was the big criticism, was that he waited too long. And the counterpoint that Lambro made was, well, who would he bring on? And for me, the only decisions that I would have made would have been to bring on Ibora earlier. Mm-hmm. I know it's kind of weird to say, but, you know, bringing on Ibora and Orta a little bit earlier, I thought it was needed, especially because you could see the press dying out. We learned from the times of Ernesto Valverde when he was here that you can't keep this up. I mean, I remember that Metalist Kharkiv game where our guys were like on fumes, and we lost in the second leg. We lost the qualification because they just ran out of gas at like the 80th minute. So it's not the press is going to be something when we're playing away in the second leg that we're going to have to manage a lot better, because we will not be able to maintain that all game, and it could cost us qualification. So Podence will help in various aspects because it'll give us finally another winger. Masuras will probably start on the bench, and then we'll at least have somebody that can come in and make up some ground on the wing for us. But before we talk about that, I wanted to then go over the Fenerbahce strengths and weaknesses as well. So for the Fenerbahce strengths, for me, came in some of the players' technical ability, because they could still move the ball very well. I thought Fenerbahce, this isn't a strength, wasn't super fast, but the ball playing ability was great. And we could see in the final third, they could move the ball well. And if not for a lot of slips and slides of guys like Tadic and just the really poor performance from Edin Dzeko on a whole, that was really, for me, what prevented them from really doing anything. But Fenerbahce on a whole has very technical ability in the final third. What's your take, and what's the take in Turkish media here for the strengths of Fenerbahce?
Strengths of Fenerbahce, they were mostly talking about the strengths Fenerbahce couldn't put in the pitch. Like, in the potentially, yes, they have this right. quality players, technical abilities, but, you know, they just couldn't bring it to the pitch. So actually there was no like they didn't give some compliment to their play. But of course they see it very positive to make the score from 3-0 to 3-2, which was giving them also extra motivation for the second leg. And I think that was it.
Now, as far as Fenerbahce weaknesses, the weaknesses for me, I brought up kind of how I thought they were a little slower than I had maybe expected. But the defensive side of things, I think Fenerbahce's defense is suspect. That left side, as we talked about before, regardless of whether it was Osterwald on the left side playing the fullback or Karyoglu, I thought that on the defensive side of things, both of them can be exposed. Even the center backs can be exposed. What is the, in the Turkish side of things, where do they see Fenerbahce's weaknesses?
Well, they also see the defenders, the way they started the game, the fact that they were losing balls against the Olympiakos pressure. But also today as well, they were criticizing Krunic so much. He also started today against Karagümrük, and he really had a bad first half, and then he was replaced. So they are hoping that he will not play in the second leg.
So kind of like from what the sounds of it, and there's some comments also here in the chat. Womb Raider, my God. It was the midfield that ruined the game for Fener after Fred and Yuksek came on, the main midfielders. It was an entirely different game. Do you think it'll be an entirely different midfield in the second leg?
I think yes, I will. I think it will start Ismail and Fred. That won't be Krunic for sure.
So if we're in the, we'll say the preview, kind of like a previewing phase here of what we could see in the second leg, really the only change I think we can expect for Olympiakos is we have Podence. Podence is really the only out-and-out winger that we have on this team. So that's going to be the primary change. And of course, with Retsos's suspension, we will have Andreas Doi, who has not played a game in a while, alongside of David Carmo. And then if we decide to make any changes with Ortega. So in your opinion, what do you think Fenerbahce will do? Because this is, as Rezan Yetish had told Costa in his pre-match, this would be a huge disappointment, catastrophic, if Fenerbahce lose to Olympiakos here. Not again, not that we're denigrating Olympiakos, but the fact that they believe Fenerbahce should be in the Conference League is one of the most valuable teams in the tournament, and it's one of the best teams on paper that exist here. They should be getting to the final. So it would make sense that they play probably the strongest lineup that they can to make sure that they can qualify. Is that something that you see there, or are they more concerned about the remaining six matches in the Turkish league and battling out with Galatasaray to win the league in Turkey?
Well, absolutely. In the previous stream, they were talking like it will be a catastrophe for Fenerbahce, which is true, because they see themselves as a favorite after Aston Villa for the whole competition, even from the beginning. And like the general idea, the point is like Fenerbahce has much more quality squad than Olympiakos, so they should win this qualification for sure. Like it's not like discussion.
So it's now. Are you still seeing, because some of the commentary I've seen it's still they're still vastly, in my opinion, underestimating Olympiacos, and I prefer it that way. Are you seeing an underestimation of Olympiacos, do you think that they will be more prepared in the second leg?
Well, some of the streams I watched, I saw like still same perception from people, like they're underestimating, but the point of view in the coach and the team, I think they would be much more careful. Also because of the all the tension they have in Turkey against the Turkish Federation and the things. So they see the Europe, I think, like much more something to prove something to the Turkey as well. So I think they will take it serious.
Of course, of course. So we're talking setup about both teams. We know Olympiacos, we're going to see probably the exact lineup we saw before. The only changes is Podence and Doi. Give me what you think Fenerbahce's lineup will be. Do you think they're going to go full force? We're going to see Fred and Yushik in the midfield. Karioglu will be on the left fullback. We'll see maybe Dzeko starting because Batshuayi is probably not fully fit yet. And what do you think? Tell me what you think the lineup will be for Fenerbahce.
Well, I think it will be very similar to today's lineup against Karagümrük. Maybe in defender position, it can be changed for if Dzeko can plays. I don't know, he returned to the team at the weekend, but he was not ready, obviously, so he didn't play today. But the thing Fener was struggling so much in the defenders to making pass, and Dzeko can be solution in that part. So it can be beneficial addition for them, which I'm not sure in the health issue, if he can be fit or not. But rather than that, I assume the similar squad as today. There will be Ismail, there will be Fred, there will be Ferdi for sure. So they will try to attack from the beginning.
I had another question as well, because when I was doing some pre-match analysis for Fenerbahce, I saw Fenerbahce constantly using the 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3, we'll call it. I saw them in that 4-2-3-1 constantly. But yet, against Olympiacos, it was 4-4-2.
Yeah.
Was there any explanation why he made the shift? Because he usually, at least from what I've seen, Ismail Kartal he kind of uses the same thing, and he doesn't really deviate that much. I've seen him deviate in other European matches before the game, like in terms of that scheme. But the 4-4-2 for me was interesting. Knowing how Olympiacos is, I was just very surprised that he didn't pack the midfield, because that's what Maccabi Tel Aviv did against us, and it was very successful.
Mm-hmm.
So is there an explanation why he chose 4-4-2?
To be honest, I'm not sure what this is explanation about.
I was just curious because I didn't know maybe if they were talking about him returning to a 4-2-3-1 coming this Thursday, or if he'll just run the same thing that he did in the first leg.
Maybe it can be because of the injuries, he wanted to rest some players, and that shape was the best he could make, maybe.
So we'll probably see. What I'm going to imagine is we're going to see a little bit more packed midfield from Fenerbahce. That's what I would do if I were in Ismail Kartal's shoes. I would pack the midfield, because some of the most dangerous situations they had was when our midfield started to get that space in between, and they were just running through it. So I will be very curious to see how he responds in the second leg. And our guys like Fred. And Ismail, they can play full 90s like every game. Do they have good stamina for that, or are they going to have to come out at some point?
Which ones? Sorry,
am I saying his name correctly?
Yükçük. Ismail Yüksek.
Okay. Yes, Ismail Yusuf, yes.
Yeah, like I think they will be playing from the beginning, and they should be playing for sure.
The full 90 minutes. So even though they played today, like most of the game, they're going to be playing the entire game against Olympiakos too, probably.
Yes, I assume they will play from the beginning.
How do you think, what about that Ferdy? Tell me a little bit about him and what you think his usage will be like in the second leg.
Well, Ferdy is I think the best player of the season so far for Fenerbahce. Fans really like him. The energy he brings and the creativity he brings. So I think he will be one of the main threat for the Fenerbahce for the second leg.
So we talked about earlier today, Ferdy, and I probably should just be continued. Karioglu. It's Ferdi Karioglu, right? Is his last name. I should just keep saying Karioglu before I confuse everybody. Karioglu, when he came on in the second half, he started to get after our press got broken up, he was getting forward a lot. I mean, he was really, really, really coming forward. I was very impressed. And I know a key strategy for Olympiakos is going to be breaking up that left-sided play there. We will have to. Yeah. And in your opinion, if we are focusing more on that side and to kind of dismantle the connection between Karioglu and guys like Tadic or even Fred when he goes kind of wherever he goes, is that enough to really put a stop to Fenerbahce, or do we have to worry about that right side, even though there's not as many attacks that come down there?
Well, I would say, like, if we stop the left side, like, if we conclude this also Fred, I think we are stopping them, like, in a very big percentage. So, yeah, I mean, also our left defender, the Ortega, is, you know, we can say like he was a weak. So we have to be careful. But I agree that if he stop the left side and then if he try some contrast, and then we can really stop them from there.
My concern is going to be more so what we do on that left side, because I think as long as we shut that side down, I think this game can be much more manageable, but I don't predict we're going to see a super high press. Mendilibar has balls. It wouldn't surprise me if he did it, but yeah. I would be more like a mid-block approach than anything else, personally. I don't know if that's how you would see it as well.
Well, this game can be also a 120-minute game, so...
Also true. God, I cannot do penalties again. I can't handle that. No more. I'm no more penalties for me. I don't want to see penalties. I don't want to see anything else. But at the same time though, Alp, you know, I look at this right now as the saying is it, playing with house money. Have you ever heard that saying in English before?
No.
So it's a saying like when you go to the casino and you're gambling, but you're gambling with money from the casino. So basically you've won money and now you're gambling with the casino's money, basically.
Yeah.
That metaphor I'm using because a few months ago, I wasn't expecting us to beat Ferencváros. A few months ago, I wasn't expecting us to be near anywhere competitive for the playoffs. I was expecting a fourth place finish, maybe no Europe, and crashing out of the Conference League. And at this point in where we are, we already made history with our first quarterfinal win in a European competition. We have a chance to make history again, and we're only a few points off the top of the table with still more than half of the playoffs to go. So that's why I say right now for me, we're playing with house money because we're already better than what I thought we were doing, especially when Carvajal was here. So win or lose, at this point, I'm not gonna lose sleep. It would suck to not make it further given what we've seen, but I'm not going to be that upset knowing what we overcame to get to the point today.
Yeah,
I don't know how you feel about the situation, but that's how I see it.
Well, I agree. I feel like it's like nothing to lose right now. We are in that stage.
Absolutely.
And also that's why I think Fenerbahce feels much more pressure than the pressure we feel.
And you know what? Actually, we didn't talk about that. And I think that's a very important point too. So Rezin had talked about that Fenerbahce plays really bad at home. And because they have a lot of pressure on their fans at home, because for whatever reason that has negatively impacted the players. I guess we could talk about that because up until recently, Olympiacos was terrible at home too. We've had some big home defeats this season. So you're very right there that, you know, this could work into our favor because we've played better away in most of these games. We beat Maccabi Tel Aviv. Sure, it was a neutral venue, but we beat them away. We beat Balk 4-1 in Tumba, and we got spanked by them at home at the Karaiskaki. So do you think this could work into our favor?
Yes, I think it's possible. Also, today, one of the streams I was watching, they were mentioning like the last year when Fenerbahce facing against Sevilla in the Conference League again. And they were really hopeful for the return leg that they can beat Sevilla at home and they can qualify. But that negative energy and the pressure, they couldn't overcome and they lost the leg. So they were eliminated.
I can look at everything I can through the stats. I can look at a lot of match footage that I can, but I can't see what happens sometimes sequentially. Does the stadium like turn on the team when they start to go, when they go like a goal down quickly, or if they're not playing well off the bat? What is the atmosphere like sometimes in those games? I don't know if that's something you can shed some insight on. I was curious.
You mean in Turkey?
Yes, in Turkey. I'm talking about in Turkey, yes. Specifically for Fenerbahce, out of curiosity.
Uh-huh. Like, I've never been to Fenerbahce Stadium, but, like, I can imagine when the things are going bad, when there are a lot of stress on the fans and also on the players, and fans start reacting negatively to the players, so it's even making their motivation even down. So probably that can be the reason. And also, I observe that the stadium gets more and more silent when there is a big tension and pressure.
So, in reality, if Olympiacos can find a way to put some very early pressure on Fenerbahce, maybe even get an early goal, or we could, ideally, we could end up turning the stadium against them. And yeah, perhaps that's why Rezin Yediş brought that up.
Yeah, that would make our job much easier.
It would. I'm glad you brought that up because the pressure from the inside of the stadium was something that I had meant to talk about before, but I completely forgot about. Let's look at some of the – we got a lot of comments coming in that I haven't really taken a look at yet. So let's see. There's a couple of comments here I think we should address. But actually, first one, here's one from Womb Raider here about Fener fans. No, Fener fans are extremely frustrated for years now. Players are getting whistled and stuff. If we go down by a goal, it might be very hard to come back. So actually, so he's kind of agreeing with us there in a way. So maybe it would be beneficial for us to begin like that, because then we could completely take the wind out of the sails by silencing and getting the stadium to turn against Fenerbahce. It's a very interesting thing to think about. So we have, I saw a comment here about a couple comments here about formation. Yorgos Moutsanos, Nico, we may start all three in a 4-2-3-1. I think he was responding to an earlier comment here. For me, Podence has to start as well because of their fullbacks, but he might bench one of Fortuny's Prudence because it's 120 minutes and Fortuny's can't last this much. I don't think you can afford to bench any of them because you can't play the game like you're expecting to go into extra time. You have to play the game to win. You play the game, you put your best players in, you see what happens. And then if things aren't moving in the direction you think, you have to manage it from there. That's how I see it. But Alp, how do you think that matchup's going to look with Podence and that the right-sided number 21? Was it Osei Samuel? Osei Samuel. So how does that matchup look to you? Because for me, it looks very juicy.
Yeah, very interesting one. The Osei has he's really the quick, but he also has we see some tackling mistakes, some timing issues. So I believe that if I believe Podence will find some spaces and he will be really a threat for the Fenerbahce.
I was thinking the same thing too. Because Podence, I wasn't super impressed with him, to be honest with you. I thought he was very fast as well, but I wasn't impressed. And I just kept thinking this whole game, if we had Podence in that first leg, I just kept thinking about what Podence would do to him. So I think that matchup is going to be key for us. I think that matchup, getting Podence the ball down there, letting him run on the defenders, that's going to have to be a key for us. And
especially imagine if it's still 0-0 or if it's draw after 60-70 minutes, Fenerbahce will take all the risks and Podence will find good space for him.
Oh, of course. Definitely. Now, let me ask you something. What would your preference be, Alp, regarding Andre Horta starting or Jovetic? Because Jovetic has been on fire, and he did very well against Fenerbahce as well. So what would your preference be, out of curiosity?
I would go with Horta. I think I would be more calmer, and I would save Jovetic energy for the second half.
I think you and I see eye to eye there, because I know there's been a lot of discussion about people preferring to start Jovetic over Horta. And Horta, I know, has been he's been recovering from a recent injury that he had at training. But for me, Jovetic, we've seen what Jovetic does. I really like Jovetic as a player. But I value him very much, especially for impact. And I think Horta, for me, the things that Horta can do with the ball, just very technically distributing the ball, sitting deeper, he does very well with Chiquinho and Eze. I think that starting, I would prefer that. And then bringing Jovetic on when people are starting to get tired, because Jovetic can offer you something special and magical. So that's how I kind of look at it. For anybody that's still tuning in, I haven't done a check-in. We're about 50 minutes in. Don't forget to like and subscribe. The voice you hear, there's no video. I don't have any video for you guys for Alp, but he's tuning in audio only here. This is Alp. He runs the Olympiakos Turkey account from on X or Twitter, as some of you may know it. And he's giving us a lot of great insights right now for the second leg against Fenerbahce. He has a great story with how he became an Olympiakos fan, and he's been following Olympiakos ever since. You can rewind and listen to that to kind of hear his story, but he's just yet another member of this extremely diverse and international red-white community. So like and subscribe. Join us on Patreon if you want to join the community and help support us as well. And you can ring the bell. You can get notifications of when we're going live. A lot of great stuff coming, including things like merch. That should be going live very soon as well. There was a comment from Phantom Duck asking who was talking and about your insights, Alp. So that's why we went and did that little check-in. So got a couple more comments here. Start Horta for the flair, Jovetic for the crunch time. Okay. That's a take. And then he goes on to say Jovetic and El Arabi will be key if this match goes down to extra time. I don't necessarily disagree there. Yorgos Moutsanos, at this moment, I'd play Horta if he's match fit. Mendy Libre probably knows if he's fit enough to execute a similar plan as to Tumba, but if he's not fit, I'd play Fortunis as a 10 and Jovetic as a game changer. We haven't really seen Kostas Fortunis play as a 10 this year, so I'm not going to hold my breath for that. Alp, do you think there's any possibility Kostas Fortunis plays as a 10, in your opinion?
Not sure.
I just don't see it happening because it hasn't happened really this season. So I just don't see that happening. I'd like to see it, but I just don't believe it'll happen. Womb Raider, Osai is a winger that was turned into a right back. He's not that good of a defender. That's true. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. It's not just Olympiacos that turns our wingers into wingbacks or our wingbacks into wingers. So it's very, very interesting. Question here. Besides Retzos, are there any other suspensions? No. We have Podence back, so, and he was the only suspension that we had. So there's no – everybody else on our list will be available. Remember, guys, we only had three changes to the list after all of the new additions that came in. So guys like Gelson Martins, not that it matters because I think he's injured again anyway, Nelson Abbey, those guys are not on the list. Fran Navarro, not that he counts. He's hasn't really done anything for us anyway. But those – we only had three changes to the list after all the people that left. So once we lost the Freres, the Porozos, you know, all the guys that we no longer have here, technically Mari Camara is on the list, but he's right now persona non grata. So we only had three changes that we could make, which was Chiquinho, Porta, and my goodness. Why am I – what? Chiquinho, Porta, and what am I doing here? I'm having the biggest brain fart. Anyway, you guys get the picture. David Karma. Jesus Christ. My God. It's been a long day. It's been a long day, and the technical difficulties are also difficulties in my mind too. So, but anyway, those were the three changes we were allowed. So we have a very thin list, which is why when we were talking about substitutions in the first leg, we're talking about who we can bring on, because there's not really a lot of choices you can make. You're either shutting things down with Ibora. You have Alexandropoulos, who's been nursing a hip issue. Omar Richards, I believe, is on the list, but you know the guy really hasn't played a lot of first team football also. So you're going to trust him and throw him into the deep end. So there's really not a lot that we can do. And that, you know, the club put itself into this position, but it is what it is. So we have to manage with what we have. SL asking. Yeah, we talked about this a little earlier, buddy. The CB pair will be Andreas Joy and David Carmo. And guys, we are starting to come up to the end of the show here. There is a poll that you can vote in right now. It is, we asked if you think Olympiacos will qualify for the semifinals. We asked the same question after the first leg. And we're asking it again now to see if anything's changed. And it looks like it did change just a little bit. But Alp, tell me, do you think Olympiacos will qualify?
I will say yes. In this decision, I'm more trusting than to Fenerbahce having stress, and like they cannot handle the stress, the pressure. But my feeling says it will go to overtime, and we will make it in overtime.
I like that. If you're listening and you're in the audience, leave your predictions below. Give me match predictions. I want to hear score lines, what you think it will be. 79% of you think that we are going to qualify. So there's still very positive outlook from Olympiacos fans. It sounds like Fenerbahce fans are also very confident that this will be taken care of in the second leg, and they're going to be qualifying. So the way I see it is, and I don't disagree. I see a grungy match away. I think things are going to be a little bit more I don't think we're going to have as high pressure of a plan and and a setup. I think it's going to be a little bit more measured. I think it's going to be more mid-block. I think we're going to play it a little ugly. Given what I saw with Mendilibar when he was with Sevilla last season when he won the Europa League, I think we are going to play it similar to how they were playing in some of those games when they played and they were basically like strangling Roma's midfield in the Europa League final. I have a feeling we're going to see similar types of tactics employed for this game. I think that it's I'm feeling a draw. I'm feeling like a one. I'm feeling like a grungy 1-1, where I could see us taking the lead and then Fenerbahce leveling at 1-1 and then kind of things being drawn out. Some of these score lines. Oh my goodness, Achilleas Bale 6-1. Look, buddy, I think that worked for Maccabi Tel Aviv, but this Fenerbahce team is way more talented. I don't see that. I just don't see that happening. That's hysterical, though. We've got a 2-2 here. 4-3. Is this an aggregate? Or you think it's going to be 4-3 tomorrow? Okay. Yorgos Moutsanos, clarify for me if that's an aggregate or if that's the actual score. Midnight Sprite. 2-0 or 1-0 Olympiacos. Phantom Duck, 2-2 and extra time. Oh my goodness. Well, it would have to be because we have a goal advantage. So it would have to be like 2-1 for that to go into extra time. So that
it can be 2-1 and finish 2-2 in the extra time.
Right, exactly. Oh, there you go. Yeah. 2-1, finish 2-2 in extra time. Okay. Okay. So some very interesting score lines. Very interesting score lines. And oh, wow. So Yorgos Moutsanos, actual score for the match. You think there's going to be 7 goals on Thursday? Wow. Okay. Well, you know what? We've seen weirder, right? We saw 6-1 against Maccabi to turn around a 4-1 deficit, which had never happened in the context that we saw. So it's going to be very interesting. It's going to be very interesting. There's a lot of power, a lot of attacking power on both sides. Olympiacos could have 3 players this year, probably will have at least 2 with over 30 goal contributions. Kostas Fortunis has 29, El Kabi has 28, and then Pudenz. I don't think Pudenz will hit it, but Pudenz has got 20. I believe he has 23. I'm already forgetting the stat that I posted earlier today. But I think we have 3 guys that could put the goal in the back of the net. 21 for Pudenz, sorry. And then Fenerbahce has also a handful of players as well. So it actually wouldn't be surprised me to see a goal-scoring frenzy. But who do you think the goal scorers will be, Alp?
I would go with Podence for sure.
And Fenerbahce?
Fenerbahce, Batshuayi.
Because you said draw, so that means somebody's got to score.
Yeah, I would say Batshuayi.
Oh, okay. So Podence and Batshuayi. Christos Moraitis, 2-2, Podence and Carmo. There's a lot of people saying Carmo's going to score. A lot of people think that Carmo is going to do it. Maybe because they saw that crazy header he had that had some pace on it. So, very interesting. Yorgos Moutsanos, we have shit defenders, and Fenerbahce will push, being more vulnerable. Both teams have poor defense, but decent attack. Wouldn't bet my life on the 7-goal thriller, but you never know. Goodness me. You know what? Like I said, we've seen weirder things, so we'll see what happens. Well, boys and girls, we are over an hour in here. We're going to get ready and start closing up. Thank you, everybody, for joining. Alp, thank you so much for joining today. Thank you for giving us your insight. Thank you for following the show. We've known you now for, God, I think it was since we started. It's been almost 4 years. It'll be 4 years this coming August.
Thank you for everyone. And also thank you, Ari, for hosting me here as well.
I appreciate it. Thank you for joining us and thank you for being part of the community. Guys, if you want to follow him, you can follow him on Twitter or otherwise known as X. And he is at Olympiacos Turkey. But the spelling of Turkey is not like turkey, the type that you eat. It is Olympiacos, T-U-R-K-I-Y-E, but it has the U has the two dots on it. So that's the Olympiacos Turkey account. You can follow them. I think his handle, your handle's at Olympiacos TR, right?
Yes, Olympiacos TR.
Olympiacos TR, and it lets Olympiacos with a C. So follow him there. You can check out the content. He loves basketball too. So maybe next time we'll get you on a show with the guys. I know absolutely nothing about basketball. So
yeah, I would love
to. You'll never see me. I am watching now, though. I am watching the basketball team.
So, I would love to be there.
So they'll you can join them for that. But Olympiacos basketball also beat Fenerbahce this past week. So it's, you know, if we beat Fenerbahce on Thursday, then Fenerbahce will have lost to Olympiacos in three straight sports. Didn't that happen 2 years ago too in the group stage? Didn't, because we beat Fenerbahce. I thought we beat them in basketball, and then we beat Fenerbahce again at home.
We beat them in football twice in that year, but I'm not sure basketball how it ended.
I think it was the same thing. Anyway, I'll have to look that up, but it just made me think about it. Anyway, boys and girls, thank you again for tuning in this the Sunday episode. There was no game today. If you guys aren't aware, or maybe you had no idea, or you're not an Olympiacos fan, you're tuning in, our match against BOP got postponed. Epo agreed to the postponement because we were both clubs are in the quarterfinals of the UEFA Conference League. So they postponed our match. Our match with BOP will be after, so we won't have to worry about that. We will resume it, and then things will pick up after, and we'll see what happens after this Thursday, if there's another postponement that may have to happen, but we'll see. Right now, all eyes are on Thursday. All eyes are on Fenerbahce. All eyes are on making more history. So check out socials. We've got some fun stuff coming up. We'll be continuing to do some great analysis. You can join the Patreon channel. I have an enhanced analysis coming up for the first leg, where I go into the game by 15-minute intervals, and we talk about the shapes. I talk about data, things that we see, the movements, the distribution of players. It's a little bit more in depth. If you're interested in that kind of thing, you can check it out on Patreon. We also have some interviews that are coming up as well, specifically for the patrons. They're usually outside of the realm of Olympiacos, just to kind of change things up a little bit. So you can check all of that out here. Thank you, everyone, again, for listening. Thank you, Alp, for joining us. This is Gate 7 International, by the fans, for the fans, and we'll see you next time.
Good night.